every Thursday morning. After a long night of Wednesday playoff action, just waiting for you in your podcast feeds as you wake up, it's Point of Contention.
On the Athletic NBA Show as a part of the Athletic Podcast Network. It's myself, Zach Harper,
teeing up the toughest topics and questions to Marcus Thompson and Ethan Sherwood Strauss with Jade Hoy producing.
Every Thursday,
subscribe
to the Athletic NBA Show.
Point of Contention.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to give you some of the craziest and most hard-hitting theories and takes of playoff action possible.
And you'll get Point of Contention right in your eardrums. In fact, if you don't like it, we'll have a Point of Contention for you right here on The Athletic.
All right.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
And it is another playoff edition of Hoops Adjacent on The Athletic NBA Show. David Aldridge here in D.C. Out in the Bay, Marcus Thompson, what is up, my man?
Yo, hey, we just opened today. It is crazy the amount of non-masks in California. I was about to go outside and kick it. I'm like, hold on, B. Hold on.
Can I tell you, it was so weird going into a restaurant and not having and seeing people without masks on, realizing, well, I guess they don't have to. They don't have to if they don't want to, you know, and not trying to be the mask police, you know, but it was just, it took me a minute. And
it's a jarring sight, man. Yeah, like we've been conditioned now. So now to see it just like in mass, like even when you watch the games now, you're like counting the number of masks, like this, there's not enough masks in that arena. So to just go out, especially in Cali, right? Like in the Bay, like we've been pretty strong with the mask presence. So just to go out and see nobody has one on, which hopefully means, you know, a lot of people are vaccinated, but man, it's just jarring. I ran back in the house. I was like, yo, no, I'm good.
So I saw the numbers. It's like, I think it's like 53% have gotten one shot and 44% of the country has been fully vaccinated as of today, including me. So I feel good about that. And Marcus, it's funny. The first game I went to, During the Wizards' very brief appearance in the playoffs, I did one of their games, and the first person I ran into was the fabulous Stephanie Reddy, who's with us today. Steph,
hey.
What is up? Driving up to Philly. Appreciate you joining us from the car.
Absolutely. You know, I'm always happy to be on with you guys, and that was such a treat, David, to see you at that game.
You were incognito that day. You were very, very...
That's right. My family calls it my disguise.
Yeah.
When I'm not wearing my television makeup and I have a baseball cap on, I just go into a ball game.
Absolutely. So you've been on, you were with that series with Philly. So you've been with Philly the whole time for the Turner games, including the Atlanta series now. So I have to ask you, what the hell happened to Embiid the other night? What was that?
Very interesting. We were trying to figure that out last night, and I noticed when he comes out, sometimes he does, you know, they have that cool-off section that they sit in now because of COVID, where they sit separately from the bench,
right?
And then they sit on the bench. He stays over in that cool-off section for a pretty long time. But I noticed last night that he was lying down on the floor, right on the baseline side. And, you know, not odd, because Embiid kind of does his own thing anyway, but I did notice it. And then after I did the coach's interview between first and second quarter, he was gone. And so I kind of looked out, you know, sometimes they go to the bathroom. You just never assume that it's an injury when you don't see a player on the bench, but you do observe it.
Yeah.
But then I noticed that Elton Brand was not in his seat. And that is a giant flag.
Right.
So, and I know from Philadelphia, especially because of my experience in the bubble, when I covered Philadelphia, unfortunately for them, they had quite a few injuries last year in the bubble. Remember Ben Simmons, Joel, and every single time a player got hurt, Elton Brand would go in the back.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably normal protocol for the GM. You know, you want to check on your player to make sure it's not a serious injury. But so that was also something that I observed. And then I noticed a member of the training staff came from the back and went directly to Doc Rivers behind the bench and whispered something in his ear, which
Jeez, you see everything, Steph. Man, like she got
Wow.
And then the final piece was the member of the staff, of the athletic training staff, then went to the PR person for Philadelphia, which, you know, David, that's what they always do. They first tell the coach, you know, this player is having this situation medically. He may or may not return, or we're doing this. You know, they give them the update so the coach knows he can or cannot sub him in later.
Yeah.
And then they tell PR because PR then has to release it.
Yeah.
So I'm observing all this and I'm telling my producer in the truck, like, hey, this is what's going on. I think we're going to have an update on Embiid. You know, let me just get what I can get. But it took forever. And so we decided to go on the air just with my observation and analysis of the situation based on my previous experiences. And we never did get an official update on what happened. He was for sure getting medical attention. I didn't get that much from people, but then he did come back and play in the game. So it is still a mystery. He was not himself, obviously. He was over 12, I believe, in the second half. And I don't know if he got to the free throw line or not. I think maybe twice he did.
Yeah.
But, you know, Embiid is among the league leaders in FTA. So he was definitely not himself in that second half. We're not still sure exactly what happened. He was not looking very peppy in the warm-up. And with the small meniscus tear that he has, he is not officially listed as day-to-day, but they are monitoring him day-to-day. And so before the games, when they warm him up, that's when they make their final decision on whether he will play or not. So we were observing, even in the warm-up, he didn't look like he was 100% himself, just dragging a bit, kind of bent over, hunched over, grabbing his knees a little bit more than normal, but he played.
Yeah.
But then when that happened in between first and second quarter, you know, that was the red flag was waving. So we were just watching everything. So I don't know. It's going to be very interesting, David, to see what happens, you know, game five in Philly. Is he going to play or what?
You know what was what really stood out to me, and you know you've been with the Sixers the whole time, so I want your take on this. Towards the end of the game, when it was very clear Embiid didn't have it, they still kept going to him, right? And they still kept feeding him. And even the last play, you know, he drove to the basket. Just felt like a little bit of, okay, you got Tobias Harris, Seth Curry's rolling. You know, you got maybe there's another option, but they kept feeding Embiid. And I was wondering, were they taking Atlanta like, all right, eventually we could just Debo these dudes? Did they take them a little too light? Should they have tried another route? Because it feels like Atlanta is like not messing around. And they were hot and you felt it like, okay, this team is rolling. But it just kept feeling like Philly was like, ah, we'll step that out pretty soon here. Don't worry about it. I wonder if they're taking this team too lightly.
You might be right. I mean, I don't think they're taking them overall too lightly. Certainly Doc Rivers is not. You know,
facts, I still right?
Yeah. Enough times to know that he does not take them lightly. He told me something pretty funny. I thought he was talking about Trae Young and how smart of a player he is and that people really underestimate his intellect because we see him with the deep shots and the fantastic passes. But I think what we don't talk about enough is he is capable of doing all of these things athletically, but he's smart enough to know when and how to deliver those passes.
Yeah.
He can create those shots for his teammates. It's not just creating for himself. And you saw that in that game last night when he had his career high of 18 assists when they needed it. You know, he wasn't hot in the beginning. He was struggling. But instead of pouting or forcing all these long balls, what does he do? He creates shots for his teammates, what's their exact shot. You know, like he knows exactly what shot Sean Collins sees on the run, transition dunk. You know, he knows exactly how to penetrate draw so that he can kick it out to his open. I mean, I thought he was brilliant. So I don't think that Doc Rivers is sleeping on Atlanta. I do think that maybe they take for granted that Embiid can Debo people and that he's done it this entire year maybe he wasn't himself, but they hadn't caught up to that yet. You know, I don't know, but I agree with you. I thought it was very interesting because they have other weapons, you know, and I think the issue too, that Doc Rivers is going to have a serious dilemma with the Ben Simmons at the end of the game situation, because if Embiid is not himself, and you're down to the wire like you were in game four, are they going to start fouling Ben Simmons on purpose to put him to the free throw line? And if they do that, then do you take him out?
Yeah.
You have to. You kind of have to.
I know.
I mean, it's situational, right, though, don't you think? Training. I mean, isn't it time and score and situation? There'll be some times where you can keep him on the floor. I do think you use Ben Simmons early in every period to me to get to the penalty, right? Because he's going to draw fouls.
Yep.
And then you can make a decision based on time and score about whether you want to keep him on the floor or you want to go offense, defense in a given possession. But I think you have to, especially if Embiid is limited the rest of the series, I think you have to give the ball to Embiid down low, don't you? I mean, he's too good down there. Like, he's too creative. He's too strong. He can score at will. Like, the way he closed Washington out, he can close a lot of teams out. You know what I mean? Like, he can dominate a lot of teams down there. And you just have to live with, to me, I just think you have to live with the occasional 6-13 from the foul line night. You know, like, what are you going to do? Like, you have to score somehow. And I think he's their best option for scoring if Embiid is not right. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Right. I think too, and this is interesting because Nate McMillan said that this is the first time in his career that he's ever chosen to use that hack a player strategy at the end of a game when he did it with Ben Simmons. He's never done that before. So he obviously sees something with this Philadelphia matchup where he feels like it is advantageous, you know, for him to do that. And you're right. Ben is, I mean, he's unstoppable on the block. You know, he's 6'10". He's posting up point guards. He can do a lot of things in the paint, except make free throws. And Doc said this. They've got three professional foul getters on the Atlanta Hawks. Gallinari, Lou Williams, and Trae Young. Yeah. Meaning they can draw fouls.
Ooh, I forgot about Lou. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, right.
So, and if you notice, Nate put all three of them on the floor at the end.
Yeah.
So, you know, the foul game is going to be so interesting down the stretch to see what they do. And you know, just the gamesmanship of that. Because how do you respond to that? And if you're rolling, if Ben Simmons is rolling and he's got, you know, 15 assists, but he's not making any of his free throws, that's a tough decision.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's probably harder at home, actually, than it is on the road. Because if he misses on the road, you know, the fans, they like that, so they're excited. But when he misses at home, I think it kind of – and this is any player. So Giannis has the same problem, I think, in Milwaukee. It just deflates the crowd. You know what I mean? Like, they just get so down when the guy misses a free throw. It has a really tough effect. I mean, it's a tough call for me. I mean, it's not an easy call. I wonder about this, Steph. I always wanted to ask you about this. Your background as a coach, are you – how do you – when you're sideline reporting a game – Are you observing them with your coach's eyes or with your broadcaster's eyes, or is it a little of both?
That's a great question. I'm chuckling because, you know, there are two different sets of eyes, because the coaching eyes sometimes will make me roll my eyes when I see things that the players are doing when you're reading body language, you know? I think I probably do use my coach's eyes more than I even know that I do.
Yeah.
I was noticing, for example, last night in the Philadelphia huddles down the stretch, there were lots of sub huddles, is what I call them.
Yeah.
Like, obviously the team is all sitting there and Doc or whomever is the coach addressing them at the time. But then when that huddle breaks, you'll see an assistant coach grab a certain player. And there might be four or five of these happening after the main huddle, but before they actually go out to play. And then Tobias Harris grabbed all the players, and there was a player huddle on the floor right before they started the action. You know, there's a lot of communicating going on, and that can be good or bad. You know, like, it can be really good, because I remember when I was a coach, there are certain players who you really literally have to grab and say, hey, on this play, you're on the left block, and you're going to set the screen for so-and-so. You know, like, drawing it up isn't good enough.
Right.
You really have to tell that guy exactly what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
So sometimes you see that. But then sometimes when you see the player huddle after the huddle, you wonder, is this all right, let's dig deep, we got to get a stop, let's get it? Or is it, fuck that, we're not doing that play.
Yeah.
We're doing this.
That's her player's eye right there. That's the player's eye, Steph. That's that. We ain't listening to him. We got our own play. That's the third eye, the player's eye.
No question.
So
no
you question. Do watch that, because it happens, you know? And it also depends on situation, personnel, you know, the relationship between the players and the coaches, and you know some of that going in, so you're looking for those things.
Yeah. I always say that's my failing. I don't know. Having never played or coached at the level you played and coached at, that to me, I've always like, I'm missing something. What am I missing? What am I missing? Nah, you know what I mean? Like,
that's all. She just got
I doubt it, David. You got all that.
No. There's something about having been in that huddle and knowing what personalities are like, you know, what people are like under great duress, you know, that you just, if you haven't done it, you don't know what that's like. And as you know, I can compensate for it. I'm not saying I'm helpless, but it's not the same as knowing. That's all. That's all I mean by that. And so I understand when someone's played or coached that they're seeing it from a different perspective than I am. And I'm always curious what that perspective is because it's different from mine. You know what I mean? That's just, I'm just very interested in that. So, I mean, Stephanie, there's so much to talk about the injuries in this series, also obviously in the Brooklyn series. And I just get a little weary about it because people want to start making excuses. And I ain't never seen no title with no asterisk by it. You know what I mean? Like, right. You know, like nobody said the Warriors title in 15 doesn't count because Kyrie Irving got hurt in game one and Kevin Love wasn't there the whole time. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it counts. So, having said that, with the injuries that we know about with these four teams, is there one team that you think kind of has more of an edge now amongst these four teams left in the East? And if you want to extrapolate to the West, please go ahead.
Yeah, that's so good because, you know, everyone just kind of chalked Brooklyn all the way through, right? We just like, nobody can stop that.
Well, I didn't.
Not DA. DA was on the Bucks early. Nope.
No, I'm not going front. I was on the Bucks with against a healthy Brooklyn team. Yeah. I look better now that they're half, you know, half the team's gone. So
that's funny.
Well, it's the thing that I've said this from the All-Star game on. I've been preaching this. This year is going to be different than any other year we've ever seen because of COVID.
Yeah.
So we've had this kind of truncated season, but squashed and condensed, right? So we're playing less games, but they're playing all the time, you know? So that can factor into injuries. Also, if teams played longer in the bubble with the shorter off season, that can factor into injuries.
Right, right.
And then COVID itself, you know, like the health and safety protocols, players were missing games this season that were not testing positive, but because they had potential exposure, had to miss X number of games. So all of those things, I knew it was going to make the playoffs very interesting and unpredictable because any of those things could happen on any given day to any team. So yeah, Brooklyn is stacked, but who knows if health and safety protocols were going to come into play or an injury or both,
right.
Or now in this case, two injuries, right? So you just don't know. And I have been very hesitant to make any predictions this entire playoff because of that exact thing. Like, we can all wake up tomorrow morning and hear some horrible news about another player. You just never know. But having said that, the state that we're in right now, I think that Milwaukee looks really good. And I'm really high on them because of Jrue Holiday. I think that he adds a whole another dimension that they needed. I do like the addition of PJ Tucker, and I think Chris Middleton's evolving into a great player. I like them. I just don't feel comfortable with them long term. I there's something about them that's just not quite right still. And I don't know really what it is because they have great pieces.
Right.
Brooklyn, but
which eye is that? Which eye is you?
Oh gosh. That's my coach's eye.
Yeah.
The last two seasons, to be frank. I don't know what it is, if it's lack of adjustments or constant, maybe riding the horse too long. You know, I don't know what it is, but it's not quite right.
They get really random. They get really random in tight situations.
Like, yes.
They don't run anything. You know what I mean? Like, or whatever, yes. Or what they're trying to run, they don't run very well. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
And it's weird. I don't know. And part of that's on Giannis, frankly, I think, because he just, I don't know. like his insistence to take threes when he is literally shooting 17% on them. Like, why are you still shooting threes? Stop it.
They're trying to prove they're legit, right? Yeah. And then you got like Middleton is like, I could be like KD, right. And I'm just going to go 101. Right. It's like, they all need to relax, I feel like.
Right.
Like, calm down.
You know, together, yeah, y'all are pretty good. But when you start going 1-on-5, no, you're not good. Stop it.
Just give the ball to Drew. That's why he's there. He's a right. point guard. Yeah. He knows what to do.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you guys get, that's what I mean. You know, it's just something not quite right about them.
Yeah.
And Brooklyn, I don't know. Kyrie, how long is he out? How long is James out? Katie can't do it by himself. He is a tremendous player. Maybe the best we have right now in terms of versatility and things he can do. He can't do it alone, not at this level.
No,
we're too far in now.
That ankle is 2 to 3 weeks, it looked like to me. I mean, that's, you know.
Shoot, that ankle would have made me quit hoop.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, that thing touched the floor. That Joker got down like a Lil Jon song, huh? Bent over to the front. Floor. I was like, ouch. Ouch.
You know, Stephanie was interested. And look, I think you're one of the great basketball minds. I've been listening to you for a long time. Not that you're anything above 21. But here's what I wonder what you think of this. You've got teams like Brooklyn and the Clippers who really have experience with their stars being out all year, right? Like, so they've been able to develop their bench. And we're seeing guys like Reggie Jackson, like, show up big after, you know, I guess he's not that far down the end of the bench. But Luke Kennard was, like, left for dead. And now all of a sudden he's hitting big shots. And even, you know, you got Brooklyn. They're getting to the end of the bench. Is that actually an advantage in the playoffs, or in the end, if you don't have your stars, you're done anyway?
No, I think it's a definite advantage. I do. I mean, and you hear players like Shaq and Chuck talk about it all the time. The others, you know, they credit them for their championship ring because they are necessary. Obviously, whoever your go-to players are extremely important, and you're not going to win without them. But when you're talking about a 7-game series at the highest level of basketball, you're going to need, from time to time, somebody else to step up big. So it's like that X factor, and that is where your bench comes into play. And that's the thing about Philly that's interesting, is that Doc truly trusts his bench. It is not lip service. You know, you hear coaches all the time like, oh, you know, we're going to shorten our bench in the playoffs. We're probably going to play 8 or 9 just because it's, you know, it's more concentrated efforts or whatever they say. And Doc doesn't believe in that. He said, listen, we go as deep as we want to for the regular season and the playoffs. There's no cutoff point because he trusts them, partly because he's had to play them all year.
Right.
So to your question, it's important when you build that up during the regular season, because otherwise the coach will have no idea what you're capable of, how you respond in different circumstances, how you can exploit different matchups, where you are best suited as a player. All of that plays in. And so I think it's important that your bench is deep and developed.
Stephanie, he played 10 guys in the fourth quarter.
See?
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Nine of them played at least 4 minutes, like in the fourth quarter. Like,
of a playoff game.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Of a close one, too. It wasn't garbage minutes.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like throwaway time.
Yeah, yeah. So how do you, I mean, what does your experience tell you about this time of year and getting the best out of your players? Because look, this is tough stuff that they're doing right now. You know, you get to the second round of the playoffs, you get to an Elite Eight in college basketball. I mean, you're asking people to perform at the highest possible level under the most duress and the most exhausting of circumstances. So I know if it was easy, everybody would do it, but Have there been things that you see that tend to work over the long haul to get people to relax and play at their best?
Yes. And this is something that I have always firmly believed in as a player and as a coach, and I've seen it pay dividends at the professional level. It's team chemistry. It is so underrated and undervalued, and you can't quantify it. There are no stats or analysis that you can do to measure it. And I'm not saying it's absolutely necessary, because we all know there are teams where guys genuinely did not like each other, but still found a way to win.
Right.
But when you're talking about performing at the highest level, as you said, David, under duress. And now you're talking about for consecutive days, right? Yeah, series after series after series. It is it's more than a physical grind. It's a mental grind because now you're facing the same opponent for potentially seven straight games. The adjustments are going to be at their peak. So if you all get along, and I'm not saying that you're having dinner at each other's houses and you're vacationing together in the off season, that would be great. But I just mean, if you get along to the point where you respect each other, then you can get your optimal performance. Because if someone's having a bad night, the other 12 guys are going to pull him along because they love and respect him and they want him there. They're going to have his back on defense. They're not going to roll their eyes and play ole defense and let their guy get to the cup and then point the finger at him. You know, they're going to step up and take that charge. They're going to get that deflection, whatever it is. That's just my personal opinion. That's one huge factor that I think weighs into it heavily. And I also think the other part is preparation. I think the more prepared you are, and this is not just in basketball, this is in life. Yeah. The more prepared you are, the more comfortable you are, and then you can relax and just perform.
Stephanie, I really wanted you here because I got to ask you about this idea of this being the time for NBA to get a woman's head coach. And I can't think of, David, might there anybody else be more as experienced to talk about this?
Who's out there that might be good that could step in to that public role? And
I wonder.
I don't know. Handle the X's and O's and the media and the scrutiny.
So I was reading.
I can't think of anybody right now. But
I don't know, right? I was reading my guy, Kurt Streeter from the New York Times. He wrote about Dawn Staley, who is, along with Becky Hammond, being mentioned as, you know, as interview candidates for upcoming gigs. And
Kara
Lawson. Of course, yeah, Kara.
Yeah.
So I was hyped, Stephanie, because Dawn's quote was, "I surely have the confidence. I surely can stand in front of men and lead them. And yo, I want to go play hoop." Right? I was like, "Let's, Dawn's, you can't tell me nothing about no Dawn Staley, right? There's no question." She can do this and women can do this. Is this the time? How do you feel about it as one who's done it before? Do you feel this is real this time?
I do. And I like the way you phrased that. Is it real this time? That is the question, right? Because I've been asked probably for over a decade now, is this the time for them to hire a female coach? And I've always said, it's always the time.
It's been the time.
Right.
You know, like, you're talking about a candidate for a position. This is not like a royal family birth where it's the next in line. This is someone who can do the job. Gender should not factor into that equation. So it's been the time. But is it real this time? Yes, I actually do think it's real this time. I think there's been a culmination of a lot of things that have happened in our society that have allowed this time to be real. All of the things that we talk about, like leaning in and all of the misogyny that we've gone through and have been exposed, right? All the Me Too stuff that came out, how the gender inequities are everywhere, not just in title, but in pay. Like, you know, all of these things are being exposed and truly discussed to try to resolve. And this is the most important piece of the puzzle. You have people that are in a position to hire that are in the room making this decision that are women now. You have women senior vice presidents. You have women on the basketball operations side. Like in Boston, Allison Feaster is on the basketball operations side.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Swin Tash in New Orleans. So now women are in the room and they're discussing these candidates. It's real. And furthermore, and this is a term I've used now for a long time, the guys are aging out of the system. The old traditionalists that are sexist and don't think that women should be doing X, Y, or Z are getting old and they are leaving the building. So they're no longer in the room to influence these discussions. And you have a younger crop of people who, like my son, have grown up in a world where, duh, of course a woman can do this. Why not? This is all I've seen my whole life. Right? They don't put people in boxes anymore. You have grown men now who are in their 30s and 40s who were coached by their mom or another woman when they were growing up playing sports. You know, so it's a different world now. And so, yes, yes, I think it's real.
I worry, Stephanie. We see this even with black men coaches, right? Where you can do the, like, oh, we interviewed this person, right? And they don't get. So I worry. I can't wait for this moment. There's nothing you can tell me to make me think Tisha Pinatiero can't coach, or, you know, Teresa Witherspoon can't. Or, like, I don't care what. It doesn't matter. You put them in front, put a basketball, get a court, you're going to win with them just because of who they are and how much they know. So I don't even think it's a question. I just hope it's not one of these, we're going to show how woke we are and do the interview. And that would kind of piss me off, I would say. Yeah, like, I would be upset.
Yeah, the performative nature of an interview. Right. Yeah, I agree. No, completely.
Give me Diana Taurasi on a bench. That's what I want to see. I mean,
fire. But when you bring up Dawn Staley, and I'm sorry, but if she actually gets an interview, I don't know who the hell's beating her out of a job.
Right.
That big facts.
You know what I mean? Like,
big facts.
Not just because of her resume, her X's and O's knowledge, her charisma, the way she leads. Before she was at UVA, you know, all through the WNBA, USA basketball, gold medals. Now she's USA basketball coaching. I mean, national champion. I mean, it's, I don't know who would be more qualified than her. And I also don't know who would be a better person to lead a group of professional athletes than her. So if she actually gets like a real interview, I would be amazed if she didn't get the job.
We know why she didn't, right? That's my point.
Well, hopefully we get to the point where, and I've been so happy to note to see this during your series, Philly Atlanta, there's going to be a black head coach in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I love that nobody cares about that. You know what I mean? Like, and that didn't happen overnight. That took decades for that to not matter anymore. You know what I mean? And so, but it's, somebody has to be the first. Somebody has to be Neil Armstrong, right? So, I mean, somebody's got to do that.
Right.
And it won't be that big a deal once it's done. I'm sure I think the thing will open, but somebody has to be willing to be the first. And I don't know who it is, but I agree with you. I do think that I think this is going to happen this time. I really do. I hadn't thought about old people aging out, but that's a big deal. That does matter for sure. For sure.
I wonder, you know, if we're presuming it's going to happen, like you said, Dawn is perfect. Not just because of like credentials, but whoever gets it, they're going to have to handle the being first part. And I can't think of anybody else better who could handle it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm starting to think, like, I mean, seriously, does she take, is it worth it for her to take the job?
Yeah.
I'm thinking I mean, she's got it pretty good. Like, you know, like, I don't know. The money would have to be good.
No,
the money
would have to be incredible. Good. No question.
She might not, she doesn't have to take the job is the point, I guess.
Although I always, when I cover college sports, I never understood why people coached in college, because there's so much that you have to deal with that you don't have to deal with in the pros. What the pros is about minutes and money. That's it. Minutes and money.
Yep.
Give me my minutes. Give me my money. Everything else is, you know, like, there's nothing else. There's no tests. There's no grades. There's no payola under the tape. Right. You know what I mean?
Like, boosters. Yeah.
You coaches with their hands out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's all it is. You know, it's very simple. It's transaction oriented. Man. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, look, we need to let you go because you got some work to do. You got to get ready for, game five's tomorrow, right?
Yep.
As we tape this. So I want you to please keep your, you know, keep your eyes on the road. And, you know, I really appreciate you. We appreciate you so much, Stephanie. And, you know, we love you so much. You have been just great in all ways, in all ways to me over the years, and great as a coach, great as a player, great as a colleague. Really, really enjoy being in your orbit whenever you have the time to join us. It's well worth it, and I appreciate it so much. Thank you for coming with us.
I second all of that.
Yep.
You're a G.
You're a legend.
Listen, I appreciate you guys so much, all of your continued advocacy and support and encouragement, and I love you guys. This I will do this anytime, David, and you know that.
Oh, I appreciate it, Steph. My best to everybody in the family. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you down the road, I'm sure.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Oh, man. Love her.
I don't know, DA. I feel like it's a setup.
What's that?
I don't know. I think they might parade him out for some interviews.
And oh, it could be. Some. It could be. I mean, you know, you hate to say that, but I think it's there are owners, too, that are more new school than old school. So,
oh yeah,
no, you know what I mean? So from that standpoint, I could see some of the newer owners, if they had a vacancy. Like, I mean, Cuban's not a new owner, but I could definitely see Cuban, if for whatever reason Rick Carlisle left, and he's not going to, I'm not suggesting that, but I could definitely see Mark getting behind something like that. I mean, he's already got Jenny Busick on the staff, you know, so.
You already hired a professional gambler.
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that was an interesting story, wasn't it?
Wasn't it?
Read Tim Cato's piece. It's interesting. You know what's interesting to me is that Cube shot it down, but linked to it. So, you know what I mean? Yeah. If the story is like BS, why would you link to it?
Like backdoor endorsement, right? Yeah, like. That's hilarious.
You know what I mean? So,
that is hilarious.
Check out Tim Cato's story. Great piece with Sam Amick that they put out this week in The Athletic on Luka and the issues that the Mavericks have going forward as they have to deal with their star, superstar point guard. So, man, thank you for joining us, as always. Leave that 5-star review for us on Google, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get this podcast. And if it's anything less than 5 stars, you know you got to keep that to yourself.
Keep it to yourself.
Later.
Quit being a hater.